All right, man. So this is the thing. You always have this unique way of preparing for every role, but I mean, I have to ask you, and this is coming from a 100% heterosexual man. You know, you're a good-looking guy. Women love you, and then you take this
Do they?
role. Yeah, of course, man. Women love you, man. But it's
I'd like
like
to meet some of them.
you take a role like this, and you cut your hair, and I mean, some of these pictures, man, you look crazy. And then I'm like, this guy's walking around like that, and he doesn't look like that. It's like you're Kramer, and then like you switch bodies with like Newman, you know, willingly. So, like, how did this happen? What made you do all that stuff to yourself for like this role?
Well, I feel like that's the best part of being an actor. That's the most fun part is to, change your look and, create different characters and be different people and look different ways and dress different ways and experience another life. You know, I have always been drawn to the actors that, like to do that kind of stuff. So, I mean, they've been, very influential on me. I don't usually like to watch, the actors that tend to be the same in every, role that they do. And there's a long list of very good actors that's just, what they do, and they're
Sure.
good in the roles that they play. But that's just kind of like the character that they are over and over and over again. It's just kind of like different movie, but it's like same character and, different dialogue. So, I mean, as just someone who, as an observer, I mean, that is, very boring to me. So I like to watch the actors that, try to change themselves and take risks and be different people and try to be, as believable in having another body. That's the most fun part about acting for me is to, create another life. And in a lot of ways, I enjoy it more than the performing. I like to perform. I love to perform. Don't get me wrong, but I think it's like the educational aspect of it, and applying all of that into a character and changing your look and really just trying to become another person. That is so interesting for me. Otherwise, I feel like I would get bored, if I was just looked the same and took on the same kind of roles. I wouldn't do myself. I guess I wouldn't do myself justice for what I want to do as an actor if I kind of just got caught in that trap of playing the same type of people. I don't think I would feel as inspired, I don't think I would even care about delivering a unique performance because I would just, it wouldn't even cross my mind. I would just keep kind of doing the same things over and over. And as I said, there are a lot of actors that are very good that, kind of fall into that category. But I like, I know I've probably said it 5 times now, but I like the actors that, take risks and change their look and are different from role to role. So,
So let me ask you a question. Were there any times preparing for this role, like, you know, you're walking outside, you know, as the collector, and you kind of forget, like, people are looking at you, and
oh
you think you're Matt, but you're really the collector?
it's funny. The funny thing is the other day, I always keep a hat in my house because I know if I go outside, I could put the hat on because I do look like a total degenerate. So the other day, I remember I had to go out, and I had to walk. I have street parking. I live in, North Jersey, not the city, and I have street parking. And I knew that I had to get to my car, but I didn't have my hat. And it was, broad daylight, and I was walking to my car in my sweatpants and a cutoff tee with this gross beard and this weird haircut, and I could just see people looking at me. And I saw this one lady, she actually like looked scared, and so did this young kid. They kind of like stepped aside on the side, okay, let me go by. And I was just thinking to myself, if you really knew what I was like, I'm totally harmless. But in the same way, I almost thought to myself, well, this is because, the character talks about this in script about how people look at him funny and they look at him like he's dirt and all of this stuff. So in like a weird way, I got to feel like what, you know, Frederick Clegg probably feels like when he walks around and he feels the eyeballs on him. And you know what, too? A lot of it might be in his head that he feels that way because he feels so, you know, destitute and broken inside that he may, you know, be projecting that kind of stuff onto, you know, other people and what he thinks they're thinking of him. And I might have been doing the same thing, you know, because I was self-conscious about the way I was looking. And it's like I'm just waiting for someone to look at me and I think that they're looking at me funny because I look funny, you know? So it's like it was like a very weird 30 seconds there.
Absolutely.
But most of the time I try to wear a hat because I'm out in the public so much, you know, doing rehearsals and everything and on the bus and the bus is crowded and lunch breaks and everything. I mean, I feel fine in rehearsals because I'm with people that know I'm supposed to look like this. But, I mean, if I just took my hat off and walked around, I look weird. So I try to limit that.
So what has it been like in rehearsal, like preparing for this, you know, with your co-star, with your director? How's that whole process been working out for you?
Well, it's definitely been an interesting process. We've had some really long rehearsal days. It's been a grind, but it's been a good grind, I think. You know, there's so much going on in this show. It's a two-character play, and that's actually tougher to do than an eight-character play. And then there's lots of lighting changes and props, and there's just so many intricacies that need to be dealt with. So, you know, we're really working long days, but we're getting good stuff done, and we open next week. I thought we had a really good rehearsal today. I thought we had some good stuff happening all this week. So I certainly hope that by next week when we open, and hopefully the houses are packed, and hopefully it'll be great reviews. But I think I do believe that the hard work will have paid off for everyone by the time this show gets up and running.
I got you.
And I certainly hope that when it's all over, we all look back and say, oh, wow, you know, we really did a great show.
So you've talked about all the things that you've done to prepare for this role. So it's a two-character play. So what do you think Jillian has done to get the most out of her character?
I mean, that's a good question. I think what's so interesting about actors is that everybody kind of works, you know, very differently. I mean, you know, you can go to a school and be taught a certain way, how to act and, you know, all that stuff. But even then, I think that each person is going to take maybe what they've learned from a teacher or a coach or whatever, but then also apply their own formula to doing it. I mean, for instance, there's just so many ways, something very basic, to learn your lines. And I know so many people that learn their lines differently than I do. But it's an interesting question that you asked, because to tell you the truth, I don't think I have ever asked another actor, how do you prepare, what do you do to get into your role? So I've never even asked Jill that, and she's never asked me. So the conversation never really came up, but I'm sure she's doing, you know, everything that she possibly can to bring Miranda Gray to life in the way that she does it. And I'm sure it's different than the way I do it and different than the way other people do it. You know, it's like everybody has their own method. And I think you kind of have to. Not that you wouldn't think what you've learned, but I think you have to also sprinkle in, you know, ideas and formulas that work for you and kind of just, you know, make it all work.
I got you. What was the reaction, like, the first day that you came into rehearsal with the head shaved and stuff like that? How did your director respond? How did Jill respond?
Well, the director, Lisa, and I had actually talked about it before it happened. And I think at first the idea was that, because at first the hair was going to be long. I was just going to grow it really, like, long and like, you know, ratty looking. And then we had talked about going in the complete opposite direction. And I think originally I had known that it was going to be such an extreme look that I thought, well, let me get closer to the show, you know, the less I need to walk around like this. But then I really started to say, but if I did it, you know, a week before the show or a couple of days before, and it didn't look right, then, you know, then what the hell do? You just shave it off completely. So that's when I realized, you know, I needed to do it a lot sooner so she could see it and tell me what she thought. And then we knew, okay, this will be the look. And it's weird because it's like every day I kind of have to keep like shaving it and making my, you know, I think when I went to the barber, I might have been the first person in the history of the world to sit down and say, can you give me a haircut to make it look like I'm balding?
Yeah, can you give me the Mean Gene Okerlund?
Yeah, right. You know, it's funny, my aunt, she cut my hair, my Aunt Betsy, and I showed her Tony Kornheiser. I said, make me look like this.
That's great.
And she was just kind of, she was like, I've never done this before, but she did it great, and everyone just reacted about how it really looks like I have a receding hairline. The thing is, you know, and it's a good thing, I don't have a receding hairline, but it keeps growing back. So it's like, next week, I don't think I'm going to be able to get to my aunt to touch it up again, so I'm gonna have to go to the barber that I go to in New York and just say, hey, you know, just bick the top for me and leave the side.
That's great. Oh, man. So I have to ask you to, aside from the transformation and you know, physically and the emotional things that were going on, you know, as you're walking around with this new look, what do you think makes this production really that special? You know, it's billed as, you know, like a physical thriller and with some terror and obsession, but like what really like drew you to this character?
Well, I might have told you this in the interview that, you know, the written interview.
Mm-hmm.
I stumbled upon this play on accident. I was doing a short film in about 2 years ago, and it never happened. And while I was doing my preparation for the short film, I stumbled upon The Collector, and I read it, and I was like, oh, this is really, really interesting stuff. And then I, you know, looked around some more online and saw that they had made a play about it. And I knew that that was definitely something that I wanted to do down the road. I had a few things lined up before then, but I knew, like, this was definitely something that I wanted to do. So in one way, doing The Collector is my own way of satisfying that short film that never happened. You know, all the work that I put into that and all the character development that I put into that, and then it ended up falling through. And The Collector was certainly an inspiration for that kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like to do it for my own personal self, like I said, it's to fulfill that, you know, that short film that never came to pass, and still feel that a lot of work that I put into that is still going to come to fruition just in a different way. But I mean, I feel like there's so much stuff about this play that makes it interesting and that makes it a good sell. You know, just very surface stuff. It's going to be the United States premiere of this play. It's never been done before in America, and we're doing it off Broadway at 59 East 59 Theaters. It's a limited run, 21 performances. So that right there, you know, it's such a famous novel. I mean, Frederick Clegg is one of the most evil characters in all of literature, if you ask me. And, you know, they made a movie in 1965. I believe the book was published in 1963. And, you know, when I was reading it, I just felt like, wow, the author really captured the mind of a true sociopath. There's all this stuff in here about serial killers. And, you know, the more research that I did on the author, it was interesting. I found out that this was actually a fantasy of his to kidnap a girl and imprison her. And there were a lot of things that, you know, had inspired him to write this story. So I feel like that's so creepy in itself that the author, you know, this is like a fantasy of his. And I guess he lived it out through writing the book. But, you know, the director, Lisa, had a lot of really profound things to say about the play. So I'll steal, you know, some of her things, because I totally agree that You know, it's a story of obsessive love, you know, and loneliness. And in today's world, you know, I'm sure you remember Columbine in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when they found those kids out, you know, these kids were like, you know, the lowest common denominator, or at least that's how they felt, you know,
mm-hmm.
the trench coat mop, that they're feeling that the world didn't give them their just desserts, and now they were going to get theirs, you know. So a lot of ways, I think Frederick Clegg is like that. He comes from a low-class London background, never had much most of his life, awkward, collects butterflies, socially introverted, wants to be loved, wants to find a woman, but doesn't have the skills to go and say, hey, you want to meet for a coffee? You want to go out? And I also think that he feels this woman that he wants, you know, she would never give him a chance anyway. So his solution is to kidnap this girl after he wins the lottery, you know, like she wins the lottery, and he buys this like remote cottage in the middle of the woods, an hour outside of London, and he kidnaps her. But he treats her really good because he thinks that if he buys her things and shows her he has money and clear that she'll eventually fall in love with him and he won't be, you know, lonely anymore. But of course, he finds out soon enough that his plan isn't really working and that this girl wants to get out of there, understandably. And then, you know, it just kind of escalates from there. But it's also like, it's a story on socially, on class. You know, she's more from the upper class, and she's got a father who's a doctor, and she's a prominent student at an art school, and she's popular, and she's got lots of friends, and she's pretty, and she's got her whole world ahead of her, her whole life ahead of her. And then you've got him, who probably comes from near poverty and doesn't have friends and lives with his old crotchety aunt and his cousin, who's a cripple in a wheelchair. And you can just imagine, you know, the circumstances that he probably lives in every day. He's not educated. So it's almost like these two worlds collide, you know, throughout the play as well. There's so much going on.
So I have to ask too, considering, you know, your body of work and your almost, you know, constant work schedule, you're always working on something. Like, in the bigger picture, you know, like 5-10 years from now, how do you want people to look back on this performance, like, in the bigger scope of your career? How do you want people to look back and say that, like, what level or what step was this in your career?
Well, I mean, I don't know what level or step it will be, if it's anything at all. I try not to even think about that, because I think that's where you get into trouble, mm-hmm. you know, worrying like, oh, I hope I get famous from this, or oh, I hope, you know, somebody casts me in this and I can start making millions of dollars. to me, that's just that's not a good way to think about this, because it's such a difficult profession and it's so hard to, you know, get to that 1% of people who are world famous and are making millions of dollars. So I try not to think about that kind of stuff at all, because, you know, I feel like you're kind of defeated if that's what the primary motivation is. For me, I want it to be a step in my own personal journey as an actor. I want to feel that when it was done, that I felt I elevated my own, you know, performance, that I, you know, I grew myself as an actor from the last show that I did, or for the ones before that. You know, I'm just motivated by wanting to keep getting better and better and finding new ways to, you know, work my craft and tell different stories and become different people, or at least attempt to do that. So really, for me, I mean, it's great, you know, if people in 10 years say, you know, if I am a world-renowned actor in 10 years, if people look back and say, oh, yeah, I saw him in The Collector, and, you know, we really enjoyed the production, that's great. But for me, I want to feel like, well, when this is over, I'm satisfied with what I did, because if I'm not, it'll really, really bother me, because I put in so much time and effort. And, you know, like, I wanted this to come across as selfish, but Really, it's kind of just all about me. It's kind of just like, I don't worry too much about if I get a wonderful review. I mean, if I do, I'll definitely tell you that I did, you know? But I'm not going into this like praying to God that the New York Times likes me. I'm going into this praying to God that when this is all over, I feel that I did everything that I could to be Frederick Clegg. And if I didn't, that will really, really bother me a lot more than any of those other things.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say about the production that we haven't touched base on?
No, not really. I think it's going to be very exciting. I mean, well, I guess there are a few things. Yeah, I mean, we have original music being composed by Sean Haggerty. We have a great lighting designer in Stephen Wolf, who's going to really do some cool lighting tricks. Jesse Bonaventure is our set designer. She's really going above and beyond to create this cellar-like feel and, you know, construct this basement and these butterflies that are going to be on the wall. Everyone's working really, really hard. And I hope, and I have to believe that it will show in the finished product, you know, and it's not that there might not be kinks that need to be worked out throughout the run, but as there is in any production. But I certainly think that with all of the unique elements in place and, you know, really strong producer and Adam Roebuck, and also with Nine Theatricals being producers, and Lisa's dedication as the director, and myself and Jill working so hard, and the stage manager there all the time working so hard and making sure that it all just works out great. We have Blair Bauer handling costumes. So there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that I don't think people realize, and I think we have a really good, solid team of dedicated artists. So I hope that people come check it out. It's actually selling really, really well, but there are still tickets left. So if anyone's listening, go to 59.org and check out the performance schedule.